Welcome to Midday, everybody. I'm Sheila Cass. Thanks for joining us today. We've got a chilly weekend ahead of us, and it's been unseasonably cool the last few days. But the big picture about the climate is very different. In January, we learned that 2015 was the hottest year on record. In fact, this year has seen a steady drumbeat of bad news about climate change. In mid-March, climatologist James Hansen pointed to the level of warming that the nations of the world have long agreed they're comfortable with, 3.6 degrees Fahrenheit, and declared that's unsafe. Hansen's paper concludes that level of warming could trigger giant storm surges and massive ice melt, raising sea levels much more quickly than predicted. Hansen's analysis is controversial, but a study published several weeks ago in the journal Nature supports some of its conclusions. That study found that if we continue to burn fossil fuels at current rates, sea levels could rise by 5 or 6 feet by the end of this century. The lives of more than 13 million Americans could be disrupted by sea level rise, according to yet another study out last month. Coastal states are, of course, particularly vulnerable, and Maryland already is losing ground. Several islands in the Chesapeake Bay have disappeared, and others are shrinking as bay waters swallow them. What would 5 feet of sea level rise look like in Maryland? Are we preparing as we should? Is this catastrophic failure now inevitable? Here to discuss these questions and many more is oceanographer and sea level rise authority John Englander. He's the author of High Tide on Main Street, Rising Sea Level and the Coming Coastal Crisis. John Englander joins us from the studios of WXEL in Boynton Beach, Florida. Welcome to Midday.
Thank you, Sheila.
I'm really glad you could join us. Is this a crisis? Do you consider this a crisis? It's
the early stage of a crisis. It's going to be a crisis. And the strange thing with this one is if we can just wake up and see the unprecedented future that's starting to unfold, as seen in Antarctica and Greenland, but going to hit every shoreline in the world, we can start preparing for this one.
Well, when you first entered this field, and I assume that was decades ago, did you imagine we'd be contemplating sea level rise of this magnitude?
No. In fact, as I explained in my book, the truth is I looked at ancient sea levels in college as a geology major, and I was a scuba diving instructor, and I was fascinated to find ancient shorelines a few hundred feet down, which happened during the ice ages, and never thought that it would change in my lifetime. And even 30 years ago, I would say, even 20 years ago, none of us thought we could melt the polar ice caps this quickly. So as Dr. Hansen and others are describing, and as some of the unfolding scientific articles that you mentioned talk about, this is starting to gallop away at a faster pace than really any of us thought.
And some of this research, if I understand it correctly, is based on the idea of a climate tipping point. Can you explain that concept?
Sure. The amount of ice on the planet, and it's on land, the polar ice cap, the floating ice around the North Pole, indicates temperature, but it has no effect on sea level, and that surprises people. But
like ice cubes in a glass. You have to explain that to me, too. That totally
confuses
me.
If you just take a glass let's just start with that because it really is fundamental to the misunderstanding about sea level rise. If you take a glass of iced tea or any beverage with floating ice cubes and mark the level and don't drink from it, even though the ice cubes are like miniature icebergs, they're about 15% above the surface. As the ice melts, it will have no effect on the liquid because, like a ship, the ice cube or iceberg in the Arctic is displacing water. And the weight differential or the mass difference is compensated. And so just you can run the experiment at home with any beverage and mark the level and don't drink or add to it. To raise the level of liquid in a glass, you have to add another ice cube from outside the glass or add liquid. We intuitively know that.
So the ice cube, maybe you say it's intuitive.
Right.
I'm slowly catching up with you.
That's all right.
So you're saying the ice cube sitting there is taking up about the same volume as the same amount of iced tea or water or whatever I've got in the glass would take
right.
up. So when the ice cube melts, the whatever it is may be diluted, but it's not taking up more space. The level is not going to rise.
That's right.
Okay.
There's a difference in density of the icebergs versus the ocean, and it has some small effect. But essentially, it's the same as the experiment you could run with that glass of iced tea.
Okay.
Literally, just take a marker or a piece of tape and load it with as much ice you want. As long as the ice isn't touching the bottom, it's not supported by the glass itself, the melting of the floating ice will not have an effect on the level of liquid. And the same thing's happening in the Arctic, and that surprises people. But what's the lesson of the Arctic is really powerful. As we turn the bright white Arctic ice cap around the North Pole into dark ocean, which is happening quicker and quicker, we're speeding up the warming because it's like taking a white-roofed house and painting it black. So we know the heating or air conditioning bill will change because of the heat absorption of a dark roof compared to a white roof. Well, that's what's happening in the Arctic. So we're speeding up this climate change. The significance of this is put in perspective when we realize that the polar ice cap around the North Pole has been frozen for 3 million years. It was not conceivable that we could melt it this century, but it will happen for sure. The rate of melt, it goes up and down different years, but some September in the next decade or two, we will have an ice-free Arctic. Now, it will start to gather ice during the wintertime, but it won't be anything like the 10 feet of ice that we drilled through when we did diving expeditions under the ice cap in the mid-80s. That 10 feet or 3 meters of ice is gone. We are now down to a rapidly thinning Arctic, and so it proves that we're in a different temperature mode. The reason that sea level rises is because the ice on land, either glaciers from Alaska, the ice on Greenland, which is huge, or even bigger in Antarctica, as that ice melts and breaks off into icebergs and goes into the sea off the face of the glaciers, that is like adding an ice cube back to our glass of iced tea experiment, and that will add level of liquid. The other two things that add to the level of the ocean is the meltwater that runs off of land from the glaciers, and that's happening faster and faster. And then the oceans, as they warm, they expand, and they've expanded about 4 inches in height in the last century just because of the extra degree and a half Fahrenheit of temperature. So those are the contributors to sea level.
That's John Englander here on Midday on WYPR. I'm Sheila Cast. John Englander is an oceanographer. He is the author of the book High Tide on Main Street, Rising Sea Level and the Coming Coastal Crisis. You can be part of this conversation. Would you like to understand better why sea level is rising? Are you skeptical that it's really rising as fast as recent reports say? You can join this conversation by calling us at 410-662-8780 or send us an email at midday@wypr.org. So, John Englund, you explained to us then that it's not the polar ice cap, it's the sheets of ice, the glaciers, and just the heat in the ocean expanding the water that is raising sea level. So are we at a tipping point? I mean, most of the studies that I tried to summarize at the beginning of this hour said if we continue to burn fossil fuels as we are now, we're going to see, you know, 2 meters rise by the 6 foot rise by the end of the century, which implies that we could stop it if we stopped burning fossil fuel. Without getting into a debate about whether we can stop burning fossil fuels, is that how you see it?
No, something we can stop. That's a common but very erroneous impression. We can no longer stop sea level rise this century, or probably even the next century. We need to slow the warming as quickly as possible. If we don't do that, the melting will happen quicker and the sea level rise will happen quicker. So there is a correlation. But we've passed the tipping point, back to your first question, in the sense that if we stopped all fossil fuel burning today, I mean, never burned any more coal, petroleum, or anything else, went 100% solar now, we're still going to get sea level rise because the oceans have been warmed over a degree and a half Fahrenheit. And the amount of heat energy that is stored in the ocean will continue to melt ice in a warmer world. We see this very clearly. If you look at the ice ages, people know there's been an ice age. There were those funny kids' movies, The Ice Age Part 2, The Meltdown, and so on. And they depicted it fairly well, actually. We've had an ice age every 100,000 years, roughly. It was a natural cycle. The last ice age peak was 20,000 years ago. And when we had 2 miles of ice in the northern hemisphere across North America and Europe, sea level was down 390 feet straight down, lower than today. Now, we didn't see that because it happened 20,000 years ago. It was the most recent time. And it rose to the present level about 5,000 or 6,000 years ago, which is pretty much the beginning of our civilization, as I describe it. It's pretty much our written record.
And let me interrupt you on that point, as you just pointed out. This is before humans were around keeping records. How do you know that cycle that you just described?
Sure. That's great. As geologists and people now looking at climate, but oceanographers, we look for ancient shorelines. And I used to find them 200 or 300 feet underwater, as I said, whether it be diving or in submarines and so on. And you can actually find ancient beaches or stalactites in caves and all sorts of signs of where the shoreline was, or maybe shark's teeth are up on a hillside. And all we have to do is kind of back out the amount of land subsidence, that is land going down through tectonics or compaction, or uplift in some cases, like Alaska. So land moves up or down maybe fractions of an inch a year or an inch a year, and the sea does too. And so we have to kind of back that out and decode it. But it's really a very simple study. We know where there's ancient lakes or shorelines underwater now, and so we can, and also the boulder lines from in the Alps and other places, which is what first allowed geologists 150 years ago to kind of decode the ice ages. So we've seen evidence of this sea level moving up and down about 600 feet, roughly, over millions of years. And to realize that this is the surprising fact that none of us really stopped to pay attention to, the last 5,000 years of fairly stable sea level rise were really the peak or the turning point of a natural cycle when sea level moves up and down about 400 feet. Now, what's happened is we should be entering or would have been entering the 80,000-year phase of cooling temperature, expanding glaciers, and falling sea level for the next 80,000 years until the next ice age peak. But what's happened is because we've warmed the atmosphere by at least a degree and a half Fahrenheit and more in the pipeline, now unstoppable because the heat's been stored in the ocean, that's why we know we're past the tipping point. So what you referred to isn't so much that we can stop it any longer, that if we go further with the warming, what Dr. Hansen was warning about, is this is going to take on a runaway effect like an avalanche, and we won't even be able to slow it, in effect. Because
so it builds on itself?
Yes, and the melting Arctic is a good example. Again, while the Arctic Sea around the North Pole doesn't affect sea level, as I described, it's like taking a white roof and painting it black, and that's exactly what's happening. And so as those things happen faster and faster, the glaciers melt faster and faster. And as the glaciers slide into the sea in Greenland and Antarctica, that's what will cause sea level rise. And it will cause tens of feet of sea level rise eventually. If we can slow it and space it out over 500 years or 1,000 years, we can adapt pretty easily, I think, even though it'll still be a big adjustment.
We're going to talk a lot more about...
if we don't slow it...
Yeah. Okay. Finish that thought.
If we don't slow it, it's going to happen faster and faster. So that's the tipping point we're at. We're not at the... we're beyond the tipping point of stopping sea level rise.
But how fast it moves, we could still control.
That's right.
We're going to talk more about that after we take a quick break. We're talking with oceanographer John Englander about what rising sea levels will mean, and especially what they'll mean here in Maryland. What are your thoughts on this? Do you live on the bay or near the ocean? Do you worry about climate change having an impact on your property? What precautions are you taking? Give us a call at 410-662-8780 or send us an email at midday@wypr.org. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay with us. Welcome back to Midday. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking today about the impact the global melting of ice sheets will have on sea levels. Oceanographer and Sea Level Rise Authority John Englander has joined us. He's author of High Tide on Main Street, Rising Sea Level and the Coming Coastal Crisis. And what are your thoughts? What goes through your mind when you hear the children today will see sea levels rise perhaps as much as 6 feet in their lifetimes? Call us at 410-662-8780 or send us an email at midday@wypr.org. I have read that Maryland's coastline, when you count all the inlets, the coastal inlets, is 7,700 wrinkled miles long. So what does a 5-foot Well, let me ask you first, because there is a range in these recent studies of how much sea level we're going to see by the end of the century, more than we had expected, but there is still a range of 3 foot to 6 foot. What's your personal guess? What number should I use in asking you what impact you see it having? Are we looking at 5 feet? Are we looking – what do you think?
Well, first of all, the year 2100 is kind of an artificial line. We should recognize that because every year we talk about it, it gets a year closer. It's now 84 years out. When we started this discussion, it was 120 years out.
Okay.
Fair enough. This century, 6 feet is probably as good a goalpost as we have at the moment. But here's the thing that I think most people have missed and the scientists don't often convey. That's not the end of the story. I mean, there's enough ice to raise sea level tens of feet. And even at the amount of heat that's already been stored in the ocean, we have almost guaranteed, again, tens of feet. Now, what we want to do is slow it down so that we have 500 years or 5,000 years to adjust. But at the rate we're going in the opposite direction. We're warming quicker and quicker. We're melting the ice faster and faster. The evidence from Greenland, from a colleague just last week, and from papers out of Antarctica a few weeks ago, as you cited, is really ominous because things are galloping. It's like the beginning of an avalanche. And that's what worries us, because if we don't get this under control quickly, and there's two parts to it. One is to slow the warming, as we said, but the other is to recognize that sea level is going to rise and begin to think of the shoreline differently, that this is different than a storm surge or an extreme tide that recedes and you can pump the water out and rebuild. Sea level rise won't go down for 1,000 years, so we have to get our heads around that the stable shoreline of the last 5,000 years was just a plateau or an intermission. Sea level rise goes up and down hundreds of feet. It did it naturally, but we've now broken the pattern. We should be in the cooling phase, as I said earlier in your program, and where the sea level is starting to fall slowly over the next 80,000 years. But now we're in a super warming phase, and that's not quickly stoppable, but we should try and slow it. And then we need to recognize that sea level is going to rise. And so back to your question, I like to get people to think about 30 years out because that's a mortgage cycle and it seems much more reasonable as a planning horizon. So that gets us to mid-century. And I think by mid-century, you know, a foot or so, maybe 2 feet at the worst case is probably what we should plan on.
Okay.
By the end of the century, you know, 6 feet, it could be 10 feet.
Okay,
let
me pick up on that. Let's look at 30 years out or so, mid-century. You were in Annapolis earlier this year to give a talk. So you've seen Annapolis and you've given some thought to Maryland. What does that kind of sea level rise in 30 years we're talking, you said, a couple of feet?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think that's certainly
possible.
What does that look
like? What does that mean for
us? Well, it's a great question. So here's to put it in context, and I am working with the city of Annapolis and also gave a big talk at the U.S. Naval Academy last Tuesday. They were already having a flooding problem, but both the U.S. Naval Academy, which has been there for 170 years,
mm-hmm.
and Annapolis, I think, is 330 or 40 years old as a city.
Oldest
so
continuing operating state capital.
That's right. And here's the records they keep. 50 years ago, they got about 4 days a year when flooding downtown Annapolis interrupted traffic and business, and they, you know, shut down things. But now it's about 40 days a year. So in just 50 years, a lifetime, or less than a lifetime, it's gone from 4 days to 40, 10 times the amount of flooding. That's what's been happening. The U.S. Naval Academy now keeps boards by the doorways of the basement classrooms to keep the water out because they have many days a year predictably now when the bottom floor will flood. So they have to put like transom boards in or cofferdams to keep the water out of the U.S. Naval Academy. And they see it and they're trying to plan for it. So the question of where this is headed.
But as you said, you're talking just now about floods which tend to recede after a day or two
but
or three.
But here's the difference. Sea level raises everything. So sea level is the base level. And then when you get a daily high tide, that's on top of that, but we know how to cope with that. When we get a monthly extreme tide, that's on top of that, and an astrologic annual high tide or king tide. When a storm comes to town, it's even higher. But sea level is the higher base, and it keeps raising everything else. That's why we're seeing the more frequent flooding. But the difference is those two things, storms and extreme tides, recede, and you can recover and get back to normal, even if it happens more frequently and becomes a nuisance. But sea level, when it rises, will put things permanently underwater, is one difference. It won't go down for 1,000 years because you can't grow the ice sheets and glaciers quickly. We can't remove the heat from the ocean. And on top of that, it's a global effect. It's not just like a storm hitting one place or a high tide. And it goes up through the marshlands and up tidal rivers. So Washington, D.C., Hartford, Connecticut, Sacramento, California, London, England are all cities that are not on the coast, not subject to waves and storm surge, but they're subject to sea level rise.
So I'm picturing then, by the middle of the century, 35 or so years from now, that sort of all the areas around the city dock of Annapolis, the areas that that we go to for restaurants and go to for recreation, are going to be permanently underwater.
No, I don't think so. I think the city of Annapolis actually is being quite proactive. And it's interesting. It started with historic preservation because they have over 1,000 buildings that, you know, are considered landmarks and are part of what draws people to Annapolis. Starting with the historic preservation project there, which is headed by a gal named Lisa Craig, they're using sea level as a way to get the whole town to plan better and begin to elevate the city. So down at the dock, when they do the next kind of master plan for Annapolis, they're going to have to make some compromises and perhaps raise the elevation of that dock down there in the parking lot, even though they're putting in sheet piles right now. But next time around, when they do an adjustment, they need to probably add 3 feet to it. And if they add 3 feet to it, they've probably bought themselves 50 years. And it'll get them in the habit that over the next century or two, we're going to have to begin to raise our shorelines in a way we've never had to do before. It's the temporary flooding from storms and repeat flooding from extreme high tides that shows us what's going to happen. But the difference with sea level is it will hit every coastline and it won't go down.
That is John Englander here on Midday on WYPR. He's an oceanographer, author of High Tide on Main Street, the rising sea level and the coming coastal crisis. You can be part of this conversation. You can call us at 410-662-8780 or send us an email at midday@wypr.org. We have several people who want to be part of this conversation. Sarah is calling us from Baltimore. Sarah, welcome to Midday.
Hi, how are you? Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I had a quick question. So I'm in Baltimore now, but I was born and raised in Long Island, New York, which, as you know, is quite low on the sea level. And the groundwater is where we get all of our drinking water from. And I'm sure that that's not the only place in the country that does it. And I was wondering how these rising sea levels are going to change availability of groundwater or drinking water for the local population.
Sarah, thank you for the question. John Englander, could you hear Sarah's question? She's asking about groundwater.
Yeah, no, it's a great question. I live in Florida. I travel a lot, but Florida, for example, is porous limestone, and our water table is in the porous limestone. But in most coastal areas, we get that groundwater, as Sarah said. And as sea level rises, it does something called intrusion, which is really just that it filters in to the ground and penetrates into what was the aquifer, and either makes it salty, it initially just brackish, and eventually more salty. And at some point, we'll make a lot of those freshwater aquifers unusable, particularly in areas where it's porous rock, like, as I say, the islands or the tropical areas. But I suspect even on Long Island. That will be a problem. And it's going to get into landfills. It's going to get into toxic waste sites, things we never really thought of being as wet. So there's a whole other issue to the ground being saturated to a higher level. We need to wake up to this. We've never had sea level rise above the present level in all of human civilization. The last time sea level was higher was 120,000 years ago. I didn't refer to that, but it goes back a full ice age cycle ago when it got 25 feet higher than today. We're going to go past that. Hopefully it'll take centuries to get there, and we can adapt.
Sarah, thank you for the call. Sarah was calling us from Baltimore, and I'd like to ask you to tell us, give us the same picture of where Baltimore would be in the middle of the century with, say, two levels of sea level rise, the way you just described Annapolis. I mean, you know, Baltimore is a city with a port. How does two foot higher sea level affect Baltimore?
Well, the Port of Baltimore, I'm not familiar with it, although I actually do want to visit. We've even talked about staging a conference up there about rising sea level and its effect on harbors. It's certainly an important port, and it's an example. All ports are important, and they're massive infrastructures. They're hard to move, almost impossible, and they're actually hard to lift up. But over time, as they get more and more frequent flooding, ports are beginning to have to look ahead. Now, looking out 30 years may be a little far for them at the moment, but they're not used to this fundamental change in sea level. And there have been some articles published, I've co-authored some of them, that are trying to get in front of the port communities that they need to think differently for the mid-century and beyond, because sea level is going to reach heights they've never seen before. Ports actually will adjust because they're industrial places, and putting more concrete and raising up the height of the cranes is not that difficult. It's a challenge. The bigger problem is in the more rural areas. They go out to the eastern shore of Maryland and the agricultural area, whereas Baltimore is a dense city and Annapolis as a pretty confined, tight city, they're probably going to be able to adapt with some challenges. But I think the places we need to recognize they're going to change dramatically are the low-lying areas, which are in any rural places, and as we see more frequently or more typically out, toward Chestertown or out toward Delaware and the various places where there's sandy, low-lying coastal areas that and all the way up the Chesapeake, all up the crenulated.
This is a good point for me to interrupt and see whether we can talk to George, who is calling us from Manchester with, I think, some insights about exactly what you just said. George, welcome to Midday.
Yeah, hello. I just want to make a comment that our family had a large farm right near Astig National Seashore. My mom was one of the women who helped protect that barrier island from development back in the late 60s. But anyway, we sold the farm because the erosion where we bordered on Sinipuxent Bay was really becoming apparent back in the, I guess really probably the mid to late 70s. And the wealthy owner who bought that beautiful farm has put up a huge cement seawall in order to protect the property. And that's really about all you can do, and that's what I think a lot of the metropolitan areas are going to have to do, including Manhattan.
But your family sold the farm because you were worried about rising sea level? That was a factor in your decision?
Definitely, yes. The concern was anyone that owns property right near the ocean has got to be a little bit concerned.
George, I have to ask you, it sounds like there's moving water behind you. Are you on the water right now?
Yeah. Yeah, I just put you on my handset.
George, I appreciate the call. John Engleter, what do you think when you hear George's story about the farm near Assateague?
Well, he's right. And we see it in coastal areas. Watermen in the Chesapeake are seeing change. As you pointed out, I think Sharp's Island disappeared in the Chesapeake in 1962, I think, and Holland Island disappeared just a couple of years ago. It was on the front page of the Baltimore.
Yeah.
But down in Tangier and Smith Island, they're seeing more and more frequent flooding. These are communities that have been there for centuries, and something's changing. Now, you have a little subsidence there, which means the land is going down, which makes sea level rise a little bit worse. And so that's why you have a really pronounced effect there. And it's even worse by the time you get down to Norfolk, and the Naval Station in Norfolk has had a tremendous problem with sea level rise in the whole Hampton Roads area. So different places have different effects because of land going down, and you do have a moderate amount of land subsidence in the greater Baltimore area, but it gets worse down into the Chesapeake. But sea level changes for weird reasons that you wouldn't think of, not only land subsidence, but just because of the shape of the Chesapeake, water tends to pile up in there, in effect, depending upon the wind condition, and have an amplified effect. So you're going to see different effects for sea level in different places that may seem incongruous. And that's one of the things we help communities or businesses to understand as they plan for how high they should build and adapt. But on top of that, erosion, which George described, is made worse by sea level as the ocean gets higher and gets to a new point in the coastline. But it's also a function of different storm patterns, like that storm Joaquin that you experienced up in your area in January. It was a, you know, it was an unusual storm, just as Sandy was an unusual storm, just as Katrina was. We're seeing weird weather, and that's related to the Arctic melting, strangely enough, because as the polar ice cap disappears, the jet stream's changing and the ocean currents are changing, and as we melt, put fresh water into the North Atlantic, the ocean conveyor belt that's kind of connected to the Gulf Stream is changing. The El Nino patterns in the Pacific are changing. The ocean and air currents are changing because we're warming the planet. And we don't always see that. We just see weird weather, which might be heavy snowfall, and it might make some think that the planet's not warming. But in fact, when we were getting extra snow and extra cold winters this year, the Arctic was warmer than ever. January 3rd, the North Pole was melting. Now, early January, for the North Pole to be melting above 32 degrees Fahrenheit is astounding. But it was the same week we had a cold snap down in the East Coast. And so we tend to look at weather locally, not seeing the global picture that there's more heat in the system, but it's going to where it's going to do the most damage, which is the Arctic area.
You struck a fairly optimistic tone a few minutes ago, John Englander, saying, the good news is we've got time, we can prepare. And then everything we've talked about since then makes me feel like, what on earth can we do? We're going to take a break in just a minute, but can you begin to address that? I mean, what is this preparation that you seem to put so much hope into?
Well, I like to think of it as the glass half empty or half full. We can look at, you know, that situation either way, as we know, and it becomes an attitude one. Sea level rise and climate change are terrible, and we can and should slow them as soon as possible and stop playing politics with it. And I'm not totally nonpartisan about this. But the attitude I take about sea level is the fact is we've put enough heat in the ocean that sea level rise will continue. So the reason I turn it into optimism is to say, you know, it's kind of like aging. We're all going to age and we're going to die eventually. But we have a choice of how we take care of ourselves, how we prepare ourselves for old age, and whether we deal with health issues, you know, in a proactive manner, using the best technology we have. We can apply that same attitude to climate change and sea level and say, let's slow it as much as we can, but let's also be prepared for the inevitable, just as we do with our personal lives. And I think that's the metaphor I use. And to say, I wish sea level wasn't rising. I wish it was going to enter the falling period, because that would be a lot easier to deal with, like nature would have had. But we are past the tipping point. So we do two things. We slow the warming and we adapt to rising sea level because it's now inevitable.
And for example, George, who has left us, but I mean, George adapted in a way by selling the farm and somebody else picked it up and is building a big seawall. Is that the kind of intelligent adaptation you're talking about?
It's one good example. I mean, think of this. Once you step back and realize that sea level moves tens of feet, or hundreds of feet, actually, but let's just take 10 feet. It's an extreme amount. It's going to change the shoreline. Now, let's hope that happens 150 years from now. But we have to get this concept of a fixed shoreline and a flat sea level or a static sea level out of our heads. It turns out that was like, it'd be like driving up to the inlet of the ocean at slack tide, you know, after the tide had risen and before it started to go down, and saying, oh, the tide doesn't change or sea level doesn't change. We arrived as a civilization 5,000 years ago, more or less, written records maybe 6,000 or 8,000 years ago, at the time when sea level was at the natural cycle peak. And so we just thought that's what sea level always is, not realizing sea level moves up and down hundreds of feet. We have to get through our thick heads that as a society, and I mean all of us collectively, that sea level is going to be higher and we're going to have to give up some land to the ocean. The ocean doesn't care what we think or what laws we pass or what parties we belong to or what our political rhetoric is.
Yeah, one of the
ocean is going to get higher.
One of the points that I read that you made in Annapolis is that for every foot of sea level rise, we tend to lose about 300 horizontal feet of land. We're going to talk more about that and other things when we come back with John Englander, oceanographer, author of High Tide on Main Street. You can join this conversation. What do you think coastal areas should do to prepare for sea level rise? Have you done something that you think works? Give us a call at 410-662-8780 or email us midday@wypr.org. I'm Sheila Cast. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Midday. We're talking about sea level rise with John Englander, author of the book High Tide on Main Street, Rising Sea Level and the Coming Coastal Crisis. We've got lots of people who want to be part of this conversation. You can, too. Send us an email at midday@wypr.org or phone us at 410-662-8780. We've got a couple of people who particularly want to take issue with some of what's been said about Annapolis. Let's go first to Mike calling us from Annapolis. Mike, welcome to Midday.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I called because I've done some reading on this. I mean, language is always a dangerous thing, but I really appreciate everything that Ms. Rainlander is saying in relation to preparation. But I also, it's not so much a question I have, it's just an observation that I actually believe that the circumstance that's being described is so urgent and so dire that I'm baffled at this point that the response back from whether it's primarily governmental organizations, seems to be so weak and inattentive that I'm actually baffled by this. And I'm wondering that since he's in a position where he's frequently speaking to organizations like Annapolis, for instance, what we said about Annapolis is that, you know, they have some plans in the works to prepare. You know, I'm a pretty avid reader, and we don't. We just went through this major rehabilitation or this major facelift of our harbor down in Annapolis, and it didn't involve raising the height of the sea wall at all. And by the time we get around to doing that again, this process of the elevation of the sea level will already be in progress. So anyway, my observation is that every city, not just here, but across the country, seems to be very attentive to this, and I wonder what his experience is of that.
Mike, I appreciate the call, but before I give John Englander a chance to respond to your question, let's also talk to John, who's calling from Claiborne. John, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I wanted to visit the idea of the law of unintended consequences. If I raise my property level, my neighbor gets affected, and so if you raise Annapolis, the areas around Annapolis get affected because they can't raise. And we see that examples in history of the Corps of Engineers working on the Mississippi that build dikes on one side of the Mississippi and not on the other, and negative effects associated with that. So I think there's one thing if you're raising your own structure, but raising the land, unless you raise all land, is, I think, problematic.
John, I appreciate that insight. John Englander, how would you respond to both of these callers about Annapolis?
Well, I think the first caller was, I think it was Mike, was right, that we need to do more. And I just, you know, it's like any behavioral change. You got to applaud the good behavior. And all I can say is that Annapolis is at least talking about and trying to use historic preservation as a driving force to figure out how to adapt. And the Naval Academy is looking at it from a slightly different perspective, but also has its sea level rise task force. But there's sea level rise task forces in Miami now and Boston and San Francisco area. There's groups all Seattle. I was just there a few weeks ago. All over the country and all over the world, people are starting to wake up to this growing threat. I'd like to do more quicker. I wrote this book 3.5 years ago, and I, you know, thought that this conversation would have been advancing quicker based upon the evidence that I put together. We change slowly. We as a culture, and to John's point, I mean we can't raise all coastlines equally. But he's right that one homeowner alone can't raise something, and one town may protect it. But like the U.S. Naval Academy and Annapolis have to work together, because if one is lower than the other, it's still going to be the low spot, you know, on the shoreline in effect. We have to get our heads around a bold new reality that is really hard for us to face. When the ocean is 5 feet higher, let's hope it's 200 years from now, not 60 years from now. But when the ocean is 5 feet higher, the sea line, the shoreline will be different. There will be a few places we will have elevated with seawalls and putting in fill. But like, we're not going to raise the Florida Everglades. We're not going to raise all of the eastern shore of the Delmarva Peninsula. We're not going to raise all of Puget Sound or all of the inshore in San Francisco Bay. And part of this is natural. It's true. There was a natural cycle of sea level moving up and down hundreds of feet, 400 or 500 feet. We just were ignorant. But now we're facing an unstoppable prospect of 5 or 10 feet. And the question that you talked about at the start of the show, Sheila, was the recent evidence is that what's happening in Antarctica says instead of 3 feet, we need to plan on 6. In fact, there was a U.S. government study in 2012 which said we should plan it up to 6.6 feet of sea level rise. I think that number is going to keep getting raised. I think it's actually going to get higher. But you asked me a good question of what should we plan on. I would say this century, 6 feet for now, but knowing it can go higher. But we got to get our heads around that because we can't hold on to every piece of land that we've grown attached to, every island in the Chesapeake, every bit of shoreline, the Florida Keys, the Bahamas, the Maldives. We have become attached to land based upon where the shoreline has been for 5,000 years. We have to face a new reality.
We got an email from David who takes me to task, I think unfairly. I'll say this in a minute. David said, I just heard you request listener input by saying something like, do you disagree that sea levels are actually rising? You might as well disagree that the Earth orbits the sun. This is a matter of simple physics, and allowing that there is nothing to agree or disagree about is irresponsible. The only question is how we will respond as a global society to a global crisis. I think what I said, or it's certainly what I intended to say, was asking whether listeners are skeptical about that we'll get as much as 6 feet of sea level rise this century. But I should also say we did have a caller who couldn't stay with us who wanted to say that he was glad for global warming because we're headed for an ice age. So there are people who do want to debate this. And we had a caller who said how should we discuss this with people who say it's not happening? What is the right response? You keep saying we need to get our heads around this. What have you found actually gets people's heads around this?
Well, the first thing is to talk about the historic sea level change, which go back to the ice ages. Nobody doubts we had an ice age. They don't know that it was 20,000 years ago, but it's easy to look up in any science or geology book, anybody, even going back 100 years. Sea level moves up and down hundreds of feet with the ice ages on a cycle that's between 95 and 125,000 years. It's a natural cycle. It's been going on for 4 million years. There's no debate about that. Once you start with that and realize that sea level changes tens of feet, even hundreds of feet, we realize, okay, we got fooled because we were here at the natural turning point when it should have been entering the falling phase as the glaciers grew and the planet cooled, but we've now changed that. And while we should slow the warming as quickly as possible, and I absolutely believe that, we need to wake up to the reality that sea level is going to be eventually 1 foot, 2 foot, 3 foot, 4 foot, 5 foot, 6 foot, and so on higher. That is unstoppable. We need to slow it. But once we wake up to that reality, we will have a different attitude. Right now, we're worried about the next storm that could come through or the next extreme tide. We don't think about permanent global sea level rise. The question you asked me at the last segment was, or point made was, I talked about that for every foot of sea level, geologists or coastal geologists talk about the shoreline moves inland about 300 feet horizontally. Now, that's surprising when you look at the typical beach because that's not the slope, but first of all, in places that are flat like Bangladesh and Vietnam and even parts of Florida are very flat, and even built cities that are in fill land like in the inshore of San Francisco like Redwood City and Foster City, and they will flood suddenly with another foot of sea level rise. But the sea level permeates the marshlands like up into South Carolina, if you will, and on the inshore of the Chesapeake, and also up tidal rivers. So sea level causes an extension of flooding that's far beyond what we see at the coastline or the beach. The Everglades is another good example. People in Florida think of sea level like a storm because we're prepared for hurricanes, not realizing that sea level will get them from the other side. It's going to come in from the Everglades because that's where the land meets the water. And so every inch of sea level rise will expand the size of the Everglades and take back land from Florida.
We had a caller who couldn't stay with us who wanted to talk about development that continues along the coast. We keep building along the coast. This person, and I must say that's my impression too. We have quite a few coastal development projects, big ones as well as small ones, going on in Maryland. Port Covington, I checked. Port Covington in South Baltimore, where the development arm of Under Armour is planning a big development. It's 13 meters above sea level at this point. Does that make it safe to put a big development there?
Well, sure. 13 meters is 40 or 50 feet.
I'm sorry. It's 13 feet. It's 4 meters.
Oh, okay. Okay. 13 feet, I think, is a good amount. I don't imagine sea level getting that much higher this century by even the worst scenarios. Building cycles, you know, typically are thought of as 30 to 50 year. They're often around. Buildings last for 100 years. We can't plan for the ultimate sea level rise. There's enough ice on this planet to raise sea level 212 feet. But we're not going to melt all the ice this century, next century, or anytime soon, although we seem to be trying to do that rather stupidly, frankly. So we've got to slow the warming. We're doing the right things with energy conversion, although perhaps not fast enough. We're somehow making it political. I like to say that ice melts at 32 degrees, whether you're Republican or Democrat. It's going to keep melting. It doesn't care what laws we pass. It doesn't care what our attitude is. Go stand out the ocean and, you know, at the coast and shout at the waves. But the ocean does not care what we think. The fact is the planet's warmer, the heat's been stored in the ocean, and that extra ocean heat is going to continue to cause the glaciers on land to melt, to break off into icebergs. And those icebergs, those new icebergs added to the glass or ocean or the runoff meltwater, those things are going to raise sea level foot by foot by foot. Our task is to slow it and to begin to adapt to a new shoreline.
We have just a minute or two left. Terrence has emailed us with this question. Who is going to pay for the adaptation to sea level rise?
We all are.
We all are.
What I mean is, I get the question. People say, I've had mayors from California to Florida say, well, John, I accept the argument. I've read your book. Who's going to pay for the adaptation? I say, Mr. Mayor, I don't know who's going to pay, but I know this. You are going to adapt or your city won't be here. Now, we're going to have to change our priorities. We like to think of these budgets as incremental things and who's going to pay after a storm comes through. When the ocean is 5 feet higher, we will have adapted. In fact, here's the flip side, the positive side. It's going to be the biggest part of our economy. Adapting and adjusting to higher sea level is going to cause an economic boom. There's going to be loss, properties written off, places that are gone, literally underwater for thousands of years. But think of the economic growth that's going to happen as we do the engineering and construction. Very few people are looking ahead at that.
Well, I appreciate, John Englander, that you have helped us look ahead in this hour. We're out of time, but I'm very grateful to you. Oceanographer John Englander, author of High Tide on Main Street, Rising Sea Level and the Coming Coastal Crisis. He joined us from the studios of WXEL in Boynton Beach, Florida. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Sheila.
And I'd also like to thank Joe Squared for providing lunch. Joe Squared serves coal-fired pizzas, risotto, and local craft beers. Locations and hours at joesquared.com. And thank you for listening. Tune in Monday. It's been almost a year since Freddie Gray was fatally injured in police custody. We'll talk to some Baltimore City school teachers about how they're discussing race, policing, and inequality with their students. I'm Sheila Cast. Stay tuned now for Here and Now, and have a great weekend.
Midday is produced by Maureen Harvey and Andrea Appleton. The show is engineered by Luke Spicknall. Music produced by Jeff Truman and High Gravity Sounds. Midday podcasts and live streaming are available at WYPR.org or on demand using the WYPR app. This is WYPR, your NPR news station.